If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. Coming to you live from the Better Way Conference in Bath, United Kingdom. This is today's news talk, TNT Radio. Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome to TNT, today's news talk. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We are broadcasting live and direct from the Better Way Conference here in Bath, England, sponsored by the World Health Council. It's going to be an amazing event. There's a lot of great panel discussions coming up. We had a great live show yesterday with some in-studio guests. The same today. We've got an amazing lineup of guests. We'll be bringing them in fast and furious. I've got our first guest with us right now. So we're going to hit the ground running. Very pleased to welcome to the stage somebody who I've followed on social media vicariously for a very long time during this tumultuous thing we called the global pandemic. His name is Robin Minotti, joining us right here in our pop-up studio. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me on. I've also followed you for many years, and long before the COVID thing as well.
It's great to meet you at long last. And so, Robin, first thing I'm going to ask you is the obvious question I ask everybody at this event is, what brought you into this world, this world of dissident, this new dissidents, let's call it that?
Well, specifically to do with the Better Way Conference, I think it's what I would show on Sunday, 5:30 p.m. UK time, when I should be on. I'll show a couple of short clips on the film that we did, which looks back at kind of the philosophy of medicine, doctor-patient relationship, but not in a technical, scientific way, in a feature film way. So, you know, actors, narrative, costumes. So I was working on that since 2017. It'll be interesting to show these clips and see how the audience reacts, because I do definitely think that we were working on a project not knowing exactly what was going to happen, but in some ways knowing, because otherwise why did we choose this project rather than any other? It goes back into the history of the doctor-patient relationship, goes back into the 18th century. And what the character finds out is that things were done in a very different way. There can be different ways of putting it, but what I wanted to maybe talk about is this issue about when did the spirituality come out of the practice of medicine? Because it was there before. Not necessarily when we talk about, let's say, Christianity and Jesus as a healer, but even later on, this relationship between the healer and the person to be healed had definitely some spiritual connotations to it, because they were in relationship. When you sort of relate to someone on a specific level and you give it time, there are spiritual dimensions to it. Are they there now when you go to see the doctor? I mean, when I go to the NHS doctor here in the UK, I don't feel that. It's too short. It's more like a factory. It's more like a machine-like experience. So I'm interested in this because also what when we think about what's happened now and all the discussions about science, like, you know, someone saying this is science, and then on our side someone saying no, this is it, and then saying, well, but you're doing scientism, which is you believe the science, and instead we are skeptical, and that's what's real. So it's I'm already getting to try to demonstrate how tricky it can be when you address it from one specific angle and one specific field, because it becomes a bit like my science is better than yours. And although we would like to believe that the scientific evidence will back up what has merit rather than what is fraud or what is corruption, we can't be certain that that will cross all the boundaries that are there. Scientific journals that are captured, regulatory agencies, media. So we can't be sure that that happens. And even when and if it goes to a tribunal, someone will probably stand up and say, well, but I did it on the basis of that was my best available science, and produce some kind of journal article that backs up what they said. So I'm thinking, going back to a little bit what we try and address in the film, what if we were able to bring them out on a different plane, on directly on the plane of spirituality? Can we do that? Can we talk about that? Because in a way, I think what has been very convenient in this kind of scientism, new sort of religion or belief or cult that we are dealing with, is to say, well, that's the only plane that exists. So we don't talk about anything else. And if you want to do spirituality, you go and do it in a place which may be, you know, some place of worship, or, you know, you do it there, but you don't bring it out. You don't bring it into society. You don't. And I'm thinking, well, what if we were able to get them out on that level and to hear from them, what do they really believe in at a spiritual level? But not as a platitude, not sort of, I'll quote a line from, you know, a scripture, and that means, but just get them out as humans and say, okay, do you really believe that it's a spiritual practice to inject a healthy human being made in whatever, under whatever spiritual beliefs you believe in, to bypass their wholeness and pierce the skin and put something in there when they're not necessarily needing it? So
didn't Pope Francis actually comment on with this very point?
Yeah,
that it was an act of love to take the vaccine.
Yeah,
and a few other people have made this sort of.
Yeah, and I think you know, obviously I disagree with that, but I think in a way it's good to have these examples out there so we can really think about them, and we can really sort of think, does that fit in with all of the culture and tradition that in this case Pope Francis comes from, or does it come from elsewhere? Because it seems to me that it doesn't fit in. It seems that it's,
well, different people have different beliefs of what a vaccine is, you know, and if you ask 10 different people, that might give you slightly different answers. So that's one thing. But I think the original point, I think, is important. You said, you know, when the doctor puts their hand, when someone comes in distress in a clinic or hospital, and the doctor puts their calm hand on their, you know, to take their heartbeat or to check their, that in itself is the beginning of the healing process.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's where the objectification happened. And the objectification happened in seeing a human as an assemblage of different parts, like a machine, and treating them like that. Yeah. So looking at them, saying, you know, what hurts? Oh, this bit hurts. I'll give you this, another object, to treat that object. So where is the human left if you're just seeing what you perceive as an injured part, and then you're giving an object to treat that part of the body which you're seeing as an, where's that relationship gone? Where's that spiritual dimension gone? And I think it's necessary for that to be two-way, not, you know, if you mentioned that Pope Francis thinks, I don't think it works when it's comes from high above and orders or says everyone should do the same. There's no relationship there.
And so you're a filmmaker as well, but your background in architecture, so you have a creative background and a technical background. So I know that you have a practice, architectural practice in England.
Yeah, I've practiced architecture for many years, and coming into what really would wake up an architect, I think it's anyone who took the time in September 11 to have a look at those buildings and have a look at the third building, who comes from
Building
7, but also the other ones, who comes from an architecture and engineering background, and who actually decided to be open-minded and look at it. I think from then I was already a dissident in some respects.
So you're ready to think the
I was ready to think
what society says is the unthinkable.
And I think that's where that background comes in. And after I did that, came to terms with that, as I said, at some stage the opportunity came to look at the history of medicine, and that came after that, and that's where we are now, really.
Something that a lot of us wouldn't think that we would ever have to challenge, but considering what is at stake, what was at stake, what did happen. I know that you were a very vocal critic of the lockdowns and the extreme measures against the pandemic very early, and you were very loud on social media, and you were also, you know, censored, deplatformed, and all of these things.
Yeah.
How did that feel at that time, that you, just for voicing your opinion as a, you know, person of standing in society, was being shut down at the time?
Yeah, you know, it's very strange, and but you know, we're resourceful, so I found another avenue, another voice on Telegram. And if they shut that one down, I try and find another one, all the way down to sort of pigeons with messages.
What I loved about your Telegram channel, and you migrate, I had to migrate there too because my Twitter was nuked, but you used your Telegram channel to platform other people. So you had Mike Eden, you had Corey Morningstar, you had all these really amazing researchers and doctors.
Yeah,
and
things. Yeah. I think one thing about Twitter, and maybe even Telegram, but Telegram lends itself a little bit less, is that because of the issue of the followers, people tend to do individual accounts. And that's the psychology of it. You want it to be about you. And I have my individual accounts that now it's been restored. But I think the way that Telegram lent itself to a fewer channels, in a way, that people would look at, rather than look across the board at what everyone is saying. Mm. And so in order to open that up a bit more, there was a lot of discussions going on. It became a bit of a public platform, and Dr. Mike Eden was discussing on it in comments. And at some stage, I thought, well, these comments deserve to be shared and people to read them. And then when that became a regular occurrence, I thought, well, you know, just share my channel, or just, you know, put things out here too. And so, and then when Corey Morningstar was also on Twitter, and things were sort of not, I wasn't able to communicate with her that much on Twitter because I was removed from it. It was on Telegram, and I said, well, why don't you share your investigative journalism on the channel too? So it became a platform for more people, and I think that's a strength of it, because obviously it was a little bit easier to silence people when you divide them into individuals and then you sort of take them out one at a time.
Yeah.
So I think it lent itself to that, and also because of the number of characters, it lent itself to quite black and white thinking in some ways. And I do think we do need complexity in order not to have to make these decisions between, you know, sort of simple black and white.
And also, I know when I saw the Eric Clapton interview with Oracle Films, and he mentioned your channel. And then, so tell us about how you struck up a relationship with Eric Clapton. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Eric was told about the channel through someone that was working on a project with him on a video recording of I think it was his lockdown concert, really. And they told him, they sort of saw him looking at some speeches, and they sort of figured that he would be interested and maybe ready to hear what was going on the channel. So they told him about it. So he started reading it for quite a while, I think, before he reached out to me. And then when he reached out, I thought it was someone who was sort of pulling my leg and taking me for a ride. So I was actually a little bit rude.
Catfished. Yeah. So you've been catfished.
Yeah. So I was a little bit rude to him. And then he sort of told the person in the middle, saying, you know, he's being a bit rude. And then I said, well, let me see if it is actually Eric Clapton. And then it turned out it was. And so then he sort of he was not doing that well after the injections, and I think it helped him to find a space in which people would actually listen to him, because before then no one really listened to him, and he started sort of doubting himself. You know, I think there was a general societal gaslighting for anyone who was injured. And I think it was a relief for him to realize that actually a lot of people thought that, you know, this was possible, and it wasn't necessarily a healthy thing to do, and it was entirely plausible that he was in pain because of that. And then we became very close. We worked together, and I helped him out on the lyrics of two songs. First one is Heart of a Child, and the second one is Pompous Fool. You can find them out there. And I think they're both related to the last 3 years.
So this calamity, you ended up co-writing songs with Eric Clapton. You couldn't have seen that coming.
No.
Wow. So incredible story. And also, you know, I think there's a lot of insights. You know, you kind of had to become a bit of a statistician, a bit of a scientific analyst, let's say, on Twitter early on to try to figure out what all this, because we were being totally inundated with numbers and data and dashboards. And, you know, and you did a lot. I mean, that's when I first started following you, is you're trying to figure out, is this really valid, what they are shoving down our throats? And are there real questions to be asked here?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really believe any of that from very early on. The approach was not how, you know, and that's evident in the film. It's not how healing happens. You know, telling a population, you must do this, that's not healing. That's actually the opposite. That's damaging people. That's making them fall ill. So
you already had that film project
I had
already
that film,
going.
Yeah, that's the thing. The film project started in 2017. And we had already filmed most of it.
So you were primed for asking these questions.
So I was quite sensitive to the approach that they were taking and recognizing, even subliminally, and maybe I wasn't aware, but because of the film, recognizing that that could not have anything to do with medicine. So in my case, I was pretty sure that nothing they said made any sense from a health perspective, from a medical perspective. And so as you said, I went in the only places I could go to that people would listen, and I went to find any scientific evidence even prior to to 2019 that actually started showing the importance of sunlight. Because when they said stay home and spring is coming out, you know, that was clearly the wrong thing to do. That's when you need to go out, because especially in a place like the UK, you've been starved of sunlight and the body hasn't produced the vitamin D you want. So if it was true that there was a harm for us, the thing that they should have said is go out, stay in the park, sunbathe. They did the opposite of that. And so it's not only that they were doing mistakes, they were doing everything they could to make people more ill. And I was just providing evidence for that. And once you start following that logic, I kind of, even before these gene-modifying injections came out, I was already pretty sure that, you know, the pattern had been set that what they did was not good for you. So how could it possibly suddenly become good for you in that next step? So that's when I looked for very early evidence of people not being well after them, from local papers, and that's when they took me off Twitter, because I was finding some kind of little article in something that hadn't been vetted, hadn't been edited, that said that in a particular hospital, suddenly, you know, a few weeks after the first injections, there was an overwhelming number of ill people, and you know, evidence like that. And that's when basically they pulled the plug on my Twitter for it, and I didn't get back for a few years.
Yeah, it took me roughly 18 months. And the crazy thing is, the things that we were talking about very soon became common parlance after we were banned. So it's just a question of saying it too early. That's the crime, is that you were too early.
Yeah, but I think that's where I actually am most comfortable. When it's those early stages there's a narrative that's being put out, and to pick the faults in it, find the holes in it, find where it leaks, that's, I feel comfortable doing that quite quickly. And once it sets in, once there's enough people that are able to latch on to whatever work that I have done, then I'm happy to sort of step back and have a look at what the next one is. And I think those initial moments are quite important, because they set a little bit the two positions, and they also allow people to see that there's not only one Overton window, there's two, and you can decide which one to open. So I'd like to open one in another direction, say, hey guys, you can look out this way. And if I'm one of the first to do it, I'm doing it, because then you can follow on from that. So that's, I think, where I operate best. And in the case of the film, it was even preceding everything that happened. So that was anticipating everything that happened. Not consciously. If you had asked me in 2017, are you doing it because there's going to be a sort of a scare of a virus? I'd probably say no. But then when you look at it now, you think, well, I probably knew that something was off in the way we think. And I still think that something is off in the way people think, including the, you know, doctors, including the medical profession, and including people who have found, you know, solutions on our side. I think that the problem is a little bit bigger than what we are facing from a philosophical angle, and it's what we were talking about before. It's to not see things in a materialist scientism angle, where you're only fixed because you're given this that addresses that. We are biological entities, highly complex, but also spiritual feeling beings that thrive when we relate and when we're understood, when we're listened to by others. And then that's something that you can't really replicate in a tablet.
We're at the Better Way Conference in Bath, England. Amazing event. We're amongst the conference attendees now, so you can kind of hear the crowd in the background. I'm here with Robin Menotti, and I don't know how to describe you because I think you're probably many things. You probably don't want to pigeonhole yourself either. I would call you a artist first and foremost, with a master of many mediums, but also, you know, a really dedicated activist and a voice for truth. And before we go, we just got a couple of minutes before we go to break, Robin, but your panel discussion, tell us when it is and what you'll be talking
about. Yeah, my
about.
Panel discussion is the last one, which is panel 8, and it's Sunday, starts at 5:30 p.m. UK time, and I'm starting as the first speaker on the panel. And I think we'll have a few days of conference before, so I think it probably will be a little bit different than a purely science or doctor or medicine led. And mine in specifically will be a little bit about cinema and about this film and about how we can look, try and maybe see things in a slightly different way. And not maybe even through a rational angle. That's why I'd like to show some of the clips that maybe can get, you know, through stories, they can get somewhere and then maybe they can start changing things, but not because I'm saying you must change, but because I'm offering a different angle, which includes poetry, music, you know, visuality, that starts to remind ourselves of the wholeness of being human, which isn't only about numbers and about data and about there's a lot more that we feel. And ultimately, I think the most, you know, there's people who talk about IQ and emotional intelligence, but there's also spiritual intelligence, and I think that's the one that we really need to come out on top of all of this, because we have up against us people who are extremely intelligent, who can manipulate others because they know, even through AI, machine learning, they know what triggers other people through emotional manipulation, or we call it emotional intelligence, in a kind of, they can back engineer how it works. But when it comes to spiritual intelligence, I think that's their weak spot. So that gets me back to what I was trying to say at the beginning, that and what the film in a way tries to do to some extent, which is that level is ultimately, I think, we're going to have to get to that level somehow. And I think that's ultimately where it's all going to be played out for me. And that's what I'm starting to focus on. I think, art, as you mentioned, art is a way to do it. Art is a way to address it and to explore it.
And an artist can reform the discourse in ways that, and musicians as well, and poets, they can reform it in ways that maybe the rational, technical person can't necessarily do that.
And yeah, and hopefully cross the bridge with some people who maybe are not ready to, maybe because out of fear, to believe a lot of the things that we have already accepted.
Robin Menotti, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm very pleased to be able to catch up with you. And good luck with your presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick.
And have a great great conference.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, and look, we're going to go to break right now. You're listening to TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host, live at the Better Way Conference in Bath, England. We'll be right back after these messages.
You should hear what Kate Shimarani is talking about.
I didn't give a rat's ass about my license, not at all. I don't care what the NMC taken over by the government in 2001 took from me. I'm a trained and qualified nurse of over 37 years. And I want to point out to everyone here, no vaccine has ever been proven safe. No vaccine has ever been proven effective, and no two vaccines have ever been tested together for their efficacy. And all I hear all the time is we're not anti-vaccine, we're just anti-COVID shot. I'm sorry that you're injured, but you need to go do your due diligence, because the same perpetrators of this have been at it a very long time. So if you have had the COVID bioengineering shot, or you know someone that has, I'm not going to ask you to come and listen to everything that I've done and standing in Trafalgar Square and everything else. No, I'm going to give you some information that might save your life. So recent studies have shown that the most effective way to remove spike proteins after the COVID injection is to take proteolytic enzyme, natokinase, on an empty stomach with water and allow 30 minutes for it to be absorbed before a meal.
Kate Shimarani on TNT Radio.
Have you ever felt like time was moving too fast? Do you need a break from the hustle and bustle of your daily routine? Then come and experience Sam Sam Yau Noi, where time slows down and magic comes to life on the stunning Yau Noi Island in southern Thailand. Our private villas and public spaces are quiet, spacious, and very inspirational. Inside and outside magic spaces, you'll find exceptional facilities and a full contemporary art collection to inspire your senses. Our dedicated Sam Sam family is here to provide bespoke services to make your stay unforgettable. Let nature and our Sam Sam family team take over, and you'll get the utmost recalibration of your mental balance. Discover the enchantment that awaits you at Sam Sam Yau Noi. Book your stay today at Sam Sam Yau Noi and experience our magic places, magic spaces for yourself.
Book your stay in Thailand now and visit samsam-spaces.com.
We didn't come down the last shower, but we are coming to you from Bath in the UK. Live from the Better Way Conference 2023. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT. You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, all right. Live at the Better Way Conference in Bath, England. We're amongst the conference attendees right now, just outside the sort of breakout area. And what an amazing segment before the break with Robin Minotti. Incredible creative individual and a great voice for truth as well at a time when humanity was really being challenged, is still being challenged. So we really appreciate him joining us in studio. We're at our pop-up TNT studio here at the event. And I'm pleased that someone stopped by, an intrepid correspondent, as we are in sort of west of England. Basil Valentine has appeared in our pop-up studio. Hello, Basil.
Good afternoon, Patrick. Good to be with you. And hello, listeners all around the world.
That's great. Finally, we're not doing a remote. We're actually
in this is situation. Unreal, this event.
Yeah.
I'm hugely impressed.
Yeah.
Terrific event. The Better Way Conference, just in case anybody's missed it. I've just met Professor David Kusmaker Anderson, honorary visiting professor at the University of Manchester, former professor of medicine at the University of Hong Kong, an exceptionally well-credentialed individual who has just written a book, Vitamin D3 and the Great Biology Reset. He's just wandering around as a punter. He's got some very, very interesting things to say about the so-called pandemic and related subjects. And I hope we can have him on as a guest soon. We've swapped details.
I just had lunch with him.
Oh, okay.
Just by happenstance. And that's a great thing about being at these events. You can just kind of hang out.
That's right.
And just kind of meet people.
That's right.
But you were just down the road, weren't you, in Glasgow?
I happened to be in the area. Yeah.
So that worked out really well.
Worked out really well, yeah. And yeah, what's great about this event is that it seems to be this crossover between what I might call the usual suspects and mainstream, very well credentialed, very well respected, authoritative, academic, and related sources, with a strong emphasis on health here. I'm very pleased to have come because, you know, I've got my own issues health-wise, and there's dozens of healing modalities around. Interestingly enough, I asked David, who is in the world of traditional modern medicine, if you like. I don't mean traditional medicine like, you know, Chinese medicine or
allopathic,
Ayurveda. I mean,
yeah.
I said, these other modalities, do you think they're worth investigating, or do you regard it as, in 21st century, quackery?
I have an open mind. I think what works for you.
So does he.
Whatever works for the individual.
Yeah,
like.
Absolutely. And that was his response as well, which is interesting and worthwhile, because a lot of the time, allopathic medical practitioners are completely closed
Have you met Clive the Carl yet?
I'd not met him. I've seen him wandering around. He was making a speech earlier. He was demonstrating a machine.
A Tesla machine.
That's right. Yeah, it looks amazing.
I'm going for a demonstration. I'll be hitting you up for a little bit of work with the Tesla machine.
I was treated to a hand and forearm massage by a lovely lady just opposite here, who's a volunteer. And Clive was on the screen, the live feed from the conference room, demonstrating this Heath Robinson machine. I mean, you know, it looks like an alchemist's box of tricks. It really does. I'm willing to give it a go. I'm going to find out what it's all about.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. And hold on for a second. We'll be in the next hour. We're going to have, hopefully, we'll have James Corbett from the Corbett Report. The James Corbett is going to be joining us. He's also presenting at this event. Dr. Simon Godak, looking forward to that. He's fresh off his flight from Brazil. He's come to England especially for this event. And so there's a lot going on in terms of attendees,
Absolutely.
Issues covered.
I mean, the main plenary session is absolutely sold out. This breakout area is very full. There's a tremendous atmosphere. This whole thing is an absolutely rip-roaring success. There's no doubt about it. Patrick's just stepped out in order to collar a guest. So I'm going to bring us up to speed with a few items from the Twitter sphere very quickly. Here's something that may entertain listeners. Patrick's just rejoined us. 20 years ago, Jeffrey Lean, former environment correspondent of The Observer and The Guardian, and this is a headline from Sunday, the 2nd of May, 2004, Why Antarctica Will Soon Be the Only Place to Live. Antarctica is likely to be the world's only inhabitable continent by the end of this century if global warming remains unchecked. I mean, absolutely.
Well, there's a Nazi base down there, right? That's, you know. They're the only ones living down there. It's the underground Nazi base at the South Pole.
We're going to go. We're going to go to Antarctica.
I'm looking forward to
it. No, I mean it. You can go on these cruises these days.
No, TNT. We'll do a TNT event.
Cruise to Antarctica.
On Antarctica.
That would be fantastic.
And we'll invite all the Nazis from the hidden base as well. I'm looking forward to that. Something to look forward to. Yeah, we're going to transition. Basil's just going to pop off for a second. I've got a very special guest. We're very pleased to be able to welcome to the stage. And this is a person who has traveled many miles to be here in Bath in the UK. So he's done a few air miles to get here. A little bit of jet lag coming in this direction. Derek Brose joining us on the stage here at the Better Way Conference. Derek, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, man.
How was the trip over?
It's been a little exhausting and adjusting, but I'm living in Mexico, so I had a 24-hour bus ride from Mexico to Texas, and then a 12-hour flight to Amsterdam, and then made my way here. But I'm excited. I'm happy to be here. You know, I don't do events anymore unless they are solutions focused. So this is the place I want to be with the people I want to spend time with.
And that's a big part of your work. And I know you're kind of doing what I'm calling what you do is it's kind of the high tech freedom thinking. And you've got your sort of ways to, you know, build communities and how to get people to cooperate together to make positive things happen.
Absolutely.
Freedom sells.
Yep.
This is a concept that I know that you're really championing, and it's come back to me through different people. So I know you're making an impact.
It's growing. Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, if anybody's curious about that, freedomcells.org is the website, CELLS.org. And I like to explain that to people that it's kind of like the cells in our body, right? We've got billions of cells in our body. Every cell is performing an individual task, unique, powerful on its own, but also collectively, they make up us, the ecosystem that is us as a human being. And the idea we promote is that if people get organized on a local level in a decentralized manner and start focusing on, you know, what skills do we want to focus on? Do we want to grow our own food? Do we want to get out of the economic system? Do we want to homeschool our kids, et cetera, these kinds of ideas. And as we're doing that on a local level, and if we're doing that everywhere, we begin to build what I think is going to be in the long term a parallel system to the mainstream system. So I've been promoting that idea since 2016, and it wasn't until COVID 1984 that really we saw this massive growth. We had about 1,500 to 2,000 people on our website prior to COVID, and now we have 40,000 people around the world who've joined, and I would say tens of thousands of more who are doing it off our website, on Telegram or other places, or just doing it in the real world and not telling anybody about it. But it's all based around that idea of organizing on a local level, solutions focused. You know, the mantra of the Freedom Cell Network, we say, assume everyone knows the problems, focus on the solutions. So we're not trying to create a movement or events or a website that's just another place to come post memes about this debate or that debate. Instead, focus on what can we actually do for all the problems that so many of us are aware of.
And then, so you're originally from the United States, obviously. I know you from also one of the things I saw when you ran for mayor of Houston. That was when
I'm running again right now. I'm in the middle of a mayoral race right now, as well as all this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting city too, Houston. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a major U.S. city.
Yeah.
And what about the difference? You said you've kind of moved to Mexico. What's the difference like in terms of the environment in Mexico and the U.S. in terms of what the work you're doing?
Yeah. So I'm native to Texas, and I've been visiting Mexico for the last 8 years. Well, prior to moving, I moved March 2020, right when all this started. In terms of differences, really, some people might have heard that there was only a couple of countries in the entire world that didn't have lockdowns, vaccine requirements, quarantines, all that stuff. Mexico is one of those two countries. So for the last 3 years, my life has been relatively normal. That doesn't mean that every part of Mexico is free and everybody's awake or anything like that. But generally speaking, because of the corruption that exists in the government, which is a lot more open as opposed to, say, a place in the U.S. where we know there's corruption, but it sort of hides under this veneer of legitimacy and all that kind of stuff. In Mexico, the average person doesn't have faith in the cops or the government. They know that they're corrupt and they can't count on them. And I believe that this leads to a more of a sense of personal responsibility. Also more community engagement, involvement, neighbors being close to each other. And also where I live in Morelia, which is central Mexico, it's also where we host the Greater Reset event that we do in January. 2 hours away from where I live, there's a small town called Cheran. And Cheran in April, they just celebrated 14-year anniversary of their uprising, where there's no cops, no government, no cartel. They were declared an autonomous region after their people, essentially, they had to rise up because the cartel was working with the corrupt cops and with the corrupt government. They were logging their forest. Some women had been abused and disappeared. And eventually the people, you know, as people will do once they're oppressed, they grew sick of it. And they, you know, they weren't sort of philosophical freedom fighters or anything. They were just regular people who got sick of being pushed around. And one day enough was enough, and they stood up and they were successful in their uprising. And eventually the federal government did recognize them as an autonomous region, and they voted to go back to their indigenous ways of organizing prior to the current systems. And it might sound kind of, I guess, out of the ordinary for most folks hearing this, but in Mexico, especially in the rural areas and like the mountainsides and stuff, the political parties hadn't even been there until the last 20, 30 years. So there's people who are old enough to say, you know, before these parties came, you were my neighbor, but now you're red and I'm blue and we're all fighting each other. So they decided they wanted to abolish the political parties. No political parties are allowed to campaign in their town. The cops from outside aren't allowed to come to town. They have their own security force, of course, but it's from within the community. And now it's truly like, if such a thing as democracy exists, this is probably as close to as you're going to get on a local level, where each neighborhood, What they do is they'll have a fire. Everybody comes around and we talk about the issues of the day. And maybe we send you as a representative to the main fire, and then all the neighborhoods send in their representative, and they make decisions this way. And so they decided that for them, it made sense to go back to that, to get away from the political parties, the corruption, et cetera. So that's 2.5 hours away from where we live. And there's stories like that that we really take inspiration from. And I think that's kind of the spirit of that, that rebellious spirit is still alive in Mexico, and just that distrust of politicians.
And Derek, are you you're taking part in a panel discussion?
Yeah, I'll be doing it tomorrow and Sunday. I have three panels. So one is going to be on the AI transhumanism conversation. One is going to be on climate change, nature nurture, I think is what they're calling it. And then Sunday, another panel called From Scarcity to Abundance. So it feels like it's kind of touching on some of the different aspects of my work. So I'm excited for that.
And what else I noticed here, there's people kind of challenging other sort of sacred, what I call state official state religions,
sure,
like climate change.
Yeah.
Whereas there's a lot of mainstream people that were forced to become dissidents because of the whole lockdown, crazy pandemic measures and so forth. So law-abiding, good behavior, you know, good people, and realize something was wrong, they're forced into it. And they're even now, I think a lot of people are open to being skeptics, mm-hmm, questioning many things that they wouldn't have questioned before.
I agree. I think it's, you were kind of saying, people who maybe were living mainstream, stereotypical, traditional lives, and you know, like you said, mortgage, kind of maybe people who never had a ticket in their life, never thought about being a rebel or saw themselves in that light. COVID changed that a lot for people. You know, you had people like grandparents and everyday average people, taxpaying citizens, all of a sudden looking for fake PCR tests and vaccine cards and things like that. And I think that in that process of the last few years, as you said, has led to people now being willing to maybe pick up some other sacred cows and say, well, is this what I thought it was, or is there more to here? Or at the very least, being willing to say, maybe that particular topic, like climate change, isn't what I thought it was, or at the very least, it's being used in a way that is going to, you know, limit my freedoms in the same way that we saw with COVID. I think that's important. I mean, there's so much uncovering of truth happening right now. I've been talking with quite a few people here today, and it seems like COVID was the impetus for, like we know with so many people, I know you've been at this for a while, for a long time. I've been doing this for 14 years now. And for a lot of this crowd, I would say, though, they're fairly new to a lot of this information. Like COVID was the impetus for them. It was the catalyst. And now they're ready to kind of go beyond that and continue to question things. And so my work tries to provide some information, just like with the broadcast you're doing here, producing documentaries and producing content, and also trying to show people that there are practical solutions and things that we can do in our life. Because I feel like sometimes our movements get so bogged down in only the investigations and the theorizing, et cetera, that people begin to feel hopeless. I mean, there's so many people in these movements who sit at home and listen to podcasts like this and watch video after video. What's Patrick up to? What's Derek up to? What's James up to? And they just get consumed by it. And I often refer to it as, it's like conspiratainment, infotainment, where maybe they're not watching the mainstream garbage, but they're still just kind of consuming, right? And there's no action behind it.
Exasperated by
exactly
all of it.
You get burnt out.
And there's a danger of becoming nihilistic.
Exactly.
And this is something, and it's real. This is, yes, a real issue. Mm-hmm. And I know you probably you've seen this a lot too. I don't know how you react when you're faced, mm-hmm, with that, but when I talk to people like that, I can kind of see that maybe they're probably missing what's right in front of their nose, maybe because they're spending too much time consuming information.
Going down those rabbit holes.
And they're not really even paying attention to their own immediate environment. I say to people, go outside.
Yep.
Some guy, I was in a forum discussion, and he said, some guy came up and he had never spoken before. And he said, what can I do now? All this stuff. And I said, where do you live? He said, I'm Phoenix, Arizona. And I said, go climb Camelback Mountain tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
There you go.
Go to the top and then, you know, get your mind straight.
Absolutely.
Get yourself centered and then go to battle and do what you want to do in this world.
That's important. I feel like I know it's an underlooked aspect of it. Like even something like that, right? That might, somebody's thinking about, oh, what's the World Economic Forum up to? What is the UN? And obviously paying attention to those things has value. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. But equally, if not, I would argue more important, is going and climbing that mountain in the morning. Going on the hike through your neighborhood, going out with a loved one and just enjoying. We have to, at least for me, we have to remember what we're fighting for, right? And if we're constantly just consumed by the darkness, then it can be, I actually wrote an essay on this years ago called The Rabbit Hole Trap and the dangers of kind of just being consumed by it, to where either you do become nihilistic or you become apathetic or you become, you know, now the term in recent years is black pilled, you know, sort of like everything's hopeless. And I see this a lot with my work because I focus on solutions, where any solutions I might propose, somebody will say, oh, you really think they're going to let you grow your own food? Oh, you really think they're going to let you buy land? Have you ever heard of Waco? You know, just there's always this sort of like ready to anticipate something bad happening instead of focusing on what we can do, which we actually have a lot of options at our fingertips. You know, if we recognize that there are tools that we can do, there are steps we can take in our own lives, from big things to small things. You know, like one example, everybody hearing this right now could decide to stop using Google as a search engine if they wanted to. Everybody who has a company, especially those of us who consider ourselves to be conscious or aware, could take our companies off Google Drive and switch to something like CryptPad or any of these many of alternatives that are starting to pop up. And those things take time, they take energy, effort, learning new things, etc. But in my mind, if we're not willing to take concrete steps to change our habits in our lives, then maybe we're not really interested in being free, right? If you know, if your limit is like, well, I can't learn a new tool, that's too much work. I can't change my own habits, that's too much work. I'd rather just obsess over the problems. Then maybe you should ask yourself if you really want to be free, because ultimately it's going to take a lot of internal and external personal work. And just watching documentaries and podcasts and et cetera isn't going to fix it alone.
Yeah, the convenience, all the, you know, people want to sacrifice the things that are the most convenient, but we're total prisoners to this concept of convenience.
Exactly.
A lot of problems I see in society as a result of new things have been introduced because it's going to make life more convenient.
I tend to agree. You know, we're facing this rise in technocracy and transhumanism, and I wrote a book that anybody can download for free. It's called How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. You can download it at theconsciousresistance.com/how-to. And in the book, I write that I very much believe the kind of battle we're facing of our times is a struggle versus of convenience, as you were saying, versus our principles, right? Because there's only going to be more options to use technology in a way that, it's convenient. Google will tell you where to go. The AI will tell you what to eat, what to think, etc. But at the same time, you can choose that, but it's often going to threaten the principles that we believe in. So for me, individual liberty, bodily autonomy, being in control of my own life, I value that to a point that every time, as much as I value technology and we use it every day for our work, I also try to make sure that it's not controlling me, that I'm still the one in control. I'm still human, right? And I do think that ultimately, in terms of technocracy, transhumanism, and all these things we're facing, everybody as an individual, it can't be Derek Bros or Patrick telling you what to do, but each individual has to decide, which ways do I want to relate to the technology? Some of us are going to choose to use AI for whatever. Others are going to opt out. Some are going to choose to use, you know, wearable technology and implantable technology and those sorts of things. Many of us will opt out of those, right? But I think each individual needs to recognize we're at a time and a place now where we have to decide how we interact with this technology. And also, are principles and our values more important than convenience? Because I think that's going to be kind of an eternal struggle there. Convenience, entertainment, comfort versus doing what we believe is right and what we believe will lead to a better world in the long term. Because I mean, for my work with the Conscious Resistance and the Freedom Cell Network, we think generationally. You know, I don't think we're going to solve this. I'm 38 now. I don't know if I plan to work as long as I can for the rest of my life until I'm in the ground. And I don't know if I'll see the fruits of my labor in my lifetime, but I have 6 nieces and nephews, and that's who I'm really fighting for. They're 13 and under. And I think that if we think in those terms, we try not to be overwhelmed about the big picture, but recognize there are steps we can take now.
So we just got a couple of minutes left. And again, Derek, I appreciate you joining us here. I know your book, book's on sale as well on your stand. Which books are you you brought with you this
week? So I've written 5 books so far, but I brought 2 of them, which one of them is the Conscious Resistance Trilogy, which is just the collection of my first 3 books. And it kind of goes into a little bit more of what I was saying a moment ago about the importance of that internal as well as external work. And my, I think, most relevant book to this conversation is the one I mentioned, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. All of these books are available to download at theconsciousresistance.com. PDFs are available, audiobooks, etc. But if anyone is out there and you're hearing this and you recognize that there is a danger that we're facing, and you're looking at things like climate lockdowns, you're looking at things like technocracy and transhumanism, and more importantly, you're looking for potential solutions. I don't claim to have all the solutions, none of us do, but I do have some ideas as someone who hasn't used a bank account since 2008, that doesn't have a relationship with the three-letter agencies in the U.S., that I'll say that, and is constantly striving to be not only outside of these systems, but more importantly, to be building new systems, because I think that's what really we're facing. I encourage everybody to check that out. Again, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. I just released the second edition a couple months ago, and it's a post-COVID edition with five new chapters based on everything we learned the last 3 years. Because I published the original book in January 2020, about a month before we heard the word COVID, and it's become my most popular book. It's now in Spanish, German, Japanese, and some other languages, and it's a solutions-focused message.
Derek Brose, amazing. Glad we could have this opportunity to talk. Have a great conference.
Thank you, brother.
And good luck with your work just going forward in general. Hopefully we can speak again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Amazing. We're at the Better Way Conference in Bath, England. And there's more coming up after the break. Top of the hour news headlines coming up, but stick around. We've got a lot more on the other side. So stay right there.